That was Greg Bedard, Boston Sports Journal. The lightest training camp he's ever covered. He's been around a long time.
Wow.
I know he's covered the Patriots for a long time, covered the Packers for a long time. Guy's been around. But Ted Johnson here on WEEI Afternoons, you've been around. Is this what you've seen, what you've heard? Is this a noticeably light or soft camp that Mike Vrabel, your buddy, has been holding down there in Foxborough?
I don't want to say it's soft, but it's lighter. It's lighter. It definitely is. They're not hitting as much. I mean, three out of the 11 first 11 practices were walkthroughs.
Tweet it out. Ted Johnson says Patriots team soft.
I did not say soft. I said lighter for sure.
Vrabel pushover, it says Johnson.
Vrabel lost his fastball.
A soft camp would be, holding their feet to the fire when it comes to knowing their plays. But everything you're told is that they get quizzed on it, that there's pressure in the meetings, that they got to be engaged mentally. You know what? What is my number one concern with this team for this season? Do you know what my – you always say it. My biggest concern is depth.
And I
worry about the depth of this football team. Your top two corners are down. Your starting right tackle, is in and out. What I think Mike is trying to do is have a tough, kind of accountable, set the tone, culture setting type of training camp without beating their brains in to prove the point. I think he's trying to have a tough camp without it being this physically draining, demanding thing where, all of a sudden you got all backups, going into the week one because you ran a really hard training camp. So you got to be careful. There's a fine line. I think he's establishing a culture, a tough culture, not a soft one, even though they're not hitting as much. I think he's doing it and setting the tone in a different way, and I think the guys were responding.
I also would just answer with, and I say have to remind myself, it's 2025. Like, we have in our mind, first day of pads, goal line, we've got a fullback in there, and he's ISOing Ted Johnson. Yeah, 25 years ago, that was a thing. Mm-hmm. That's not football
anymore. They don't
make
like that anymore.
No, they don't. They don't. And
everyone's in Guardian helmets.
I mean, hell,
caps.
The fullback on this team, he blocked for one day and went on IR. Yep. Like, this, it's a different era. Yep. And
wow.
I think Greg and I and people that have been around a long time just need to get to grips with. Matt Collins actually said himself, talking about Vrabel, and it's like sometimes I think he wants to do certain things, and then he remembers it's 2025 and the CBA only allows certain things. And so I actually think this camp has been less soft or tougher than Gerard Mayo's a year ago. Gerard Mayo's camps last year, the first hour of practice was guys running around like they were, I don't even know what they were doing, calisthenics.
Well, and most of them were watching Judon yell at
circles.
Mayo.
It was the weirdest camp I've ever seen. This year, forget the thumping. Forget Jabril Peppers taking somebody's head off. That's gone. That's a days gone past. But there's a lot of football work going on. Without hitting.
We were all there yesterday. It wasn't it? I mean, it was an efficiently ran practice. So they got a lot done.
All those plays when our heads were spinning, boom, boom.
They did Ted than Washington did, by the way.
Do you know what that's the old Bill Walsh West Coast philosophy? Like when Pete Carroll came here, I just remember him saying, guys, we're not going to hit as much as you did with Belichick, but we're going to run a lot of plays.
Right.
And it was fast, and you ran to the drills, and you got into the drills. I like that. And I think that's even though that might not be perceived as tough, it is efficient, and it's to me it's just as important to practice with that tempo as opposed to football used to be who's tougher. It's a war of wills. It's fighting in a phone booth. And Parcells used to almost think, I think he would look at training camp as, I'm going to find out who's the toughest guys are, and then those are going to be the guys I signed. It's not about who's tougher anymore.
Right.
You don't have training camp to find that out. Football's different in that way. And so, it lends to see that you would have a different style of practice than you did 20 years ago.
So my buddy Mike Giardi, our buddy here on WEEI Afternoons, he's one of those guys that charts every play with a number. Boom, boom, the result, the players, the formation, everything. And the very first team segment yesterday to start practice that was right in front of us, it was the Washington offense versus the Page. He looks over, when it finishes, he looks over, and they had gone back and forth through the three quarterbacks. He goes, it was 34 plays right there. They ran 34 plays, and there were four stations on the field. So you multiply that times four, 136 football plays were run in a 20-minute span.
If you're a person that just choreographs practices, I thought that was one of the more choreographed practices. And it was two teams that never practiced together coming together. And it was just a – that was the kind of practice, if I was a coach, I would want to see. A fast, efficient, you know, get in, get out type of practice.
And that, there was some pop, though. Like, it wasn't pop-free.
Yeah,
like,
it's still football. And when you have joint practices, you're going to have some hitting. And I think Greg was making these comments before joint practices and just in general. And I'll be honest, I fell victim to it because I still do. The first day of pads were going on, we were driving down there, and I was thinking to myself, oh, Jabril Peppers is going to pop somebody today. And then you get out there and you remember what modern full padded practices are. And the guy comes up because he had a chance. I forgot who it was. Booty Diggs. Somebody caught one, and he did the run by where he kind of gave that body language like, in a game, I'm hitting him. But he did the little run by him in front of him so everybody could see. He even ran a little further to draw attention to himself. And that's what practice is now. But to me, that doesn't mean it's soft. I see a team that looks like they're working their asses off, a team that is every drill, unlike Mayo, and I don't want to keep crapping on Mayo, but the reality is that's what we watched most recently on the practice fields of Foxborough a year ago. Every drill is efficient, bouncing from one to the next, and I think that's just modern football. Like, you don't have to do 1,000 sprints at the end of practice if you practiced hard for an hour and a half, right? Or 2 hours, or however long they're out.
I agree. And
right?
Mayo's practices were, they were out there for 2.5 hours.
Yeah. Because if you do calisthenics for an hour and a half, then you only really practice football.
Mike doesn't run long practices, but he gets the most out of those shorter practices.
90 minutes seems pretty good. And he also expects, and maybe this goes into what kind of spring and summertime they had, Ted. Remember, it's all about accountability and entitlement is going to be shown the way out the door in the room. Maybe, just maybe, he set everybody to task, show up in shape, know your playbook, and get ready to run an efficient camp. And maybe, just maybe, these guys did.
It looks like it. I mean, you know what? The thing I always look for is just, do I see buy-in? Do I see guys buying in? And you know, what does that look like? You just have to be around the sport long enough to kind of know what to look for. And so far, just I listen to guys, how they talk. Buy-in is right now, that's not a question. And that's, to me, is the biggest, you know, kind of challenge for a coach is, can I get these guys to buy in when I'm selling? They have bought into what Mike's selling. Now, what's he selling? Is it going to be good enough to get them to where they want? We will see. And do they have the horses to get there? But the buy-in to me is this team is as bought in with their head coach at this time of the season as any Patriots team I've seen since I moved back here 6 years ago has been at this time.
And that buy-in is where I wanted to go next, because the other thing that I think goes hand in hand with work and buy-in is guys flashing. And we talked about it yesterday. You know, the defensive line in front of us, there was a guy, and I'm actually drawing a blank on his name right now. He flashed. And, you know, you get a guy, DJ James has actually at cornerback had a couple practices where you're like, well, who number? What number? Is that DJ James again? Or double A. Alex Austin.
He's looked good.
And when you compare that to what Curran just talked about, a guy like Duggar at safety, Is there something going on down there in terms of the buy-in where veteran players or even players in general? Elijah Ponder was flashing on the defensive line. Guys like that flash. Do they get more opportunities?
Yeah.
Do they then get a roster spot? Does that impact the buy-in and the culture where you say, I'm a player. I've been out here.
Yep.
And just like the media, I saw Elijah Ponder flashing.
Yep.
I don't know who Elijah Ponder is, but does he deserve more reps? Does he get more reps?
He you know what? If you're a coach that wants guys to follow you, because usually the best coaches are selling the best players win.
If you don't do it, they'll
always say, if you don't do it in practice, you won't do it in the game.
Right.
So, for example, if Jalen Polk makes the 53-man roster, guys will look at
we riot
and be like,
they'll roll their eyes.
No, they won't. They won't say anything. No one will say anything. They'll just say, like, okay. I mean, is this guy really about winning? Is it about really the best player? So what he talks about, he says one thing but does something different, and that's where your actions got to be consistent with your words. And if you're saying the best guys, the guys that are, you know, showing and flashing and showing up every day, if those guys are the ones that are still on the team when they go to cut down, then the buy-in is going to be there.
And he obviously has a history of that. He brought some of those guys here in a Spillane and a Gibbons and some of those guys who
and
other
half the coaching staff
worked their way. But no, I'm talking about guys that weren't drafted, weren't high picks.
Yeah.
Because you're right. I could see the conversation Polk makes the team and Ted Johnson and some teammate are sitting next to each other.
Like, what?
Polk made the team? Really? And so, one of you would say, two words, second round. Right? Yeah. And that's all you have to say.
Yeah.
And that's why he makes it over an Efton Chisholm or whoever else you think
might have
done more.
But then right there you said, this isn't the best roster that you can say. I want my coach to make the best personnel decisions. Not just be a hard, great coach, but they also got to make the tough personnel decisions. If a lower draft pick is better than the guy that he's playing behind, he should get the opportunity to play. That's, to me.
Do you have faith in your guy to do that?
I do.
Do you have faith in the organization to do that? Because there's a second voice.
I do not.
Okay.
I do not.
Because Elliott Wolf.
I do not.
Drafted Jalen Polk in the second round.
But let's look at how many Elliott Wolf draft picks or signees are still on this team?
They're fading.
Couple. Fading fast.
And some of them are guys that people want to bring up as surprise cuts. Kyle Duggar. Mike Onwenu, right? Guys that they spent money. Ramondre Stevenson,
Cole Strange,
guys.
Keep going.
Yeah. There's, I mean, it's, those are the guys that are on the bubble.
They're almost all gone, man. So his power is. Does anybody feel Elliott Wolf's presence at any of these camps?
No. And I feel like Elliott Wolf must watch these practices and see Vrabel diving on piles, and then Vrabel meeting with fans and being like, "Wow." He owns this town. Like, he does everything right. It's one thing if you're Belichick and you're just the old school hardo, but Vrabel is kissing babies and signing autographs, is diving on a pile to fight with a player, but is also doing sort of the Belichick stoic stuff in the background.
So Vrabel is the guy that owns this big business, but is sweeping the floors,
yep,
cleaning the toilets. He's doing everything. And do you know what the other employees see? They go, man, if the boss is going to do that, then I can do that.
Following
the lead. That's kind of what he's doing.
Yeah. And that's the word he's fixated on, culture. Like, he can do it in other ways and create it with a Robert Spillane because he thinks he's a culture guy. But that might be the biggest culture right there. But you can undercut it, as you're pointing out, with a Polk or something.
Yep.
All that work you put in doing these various things, one message can be sent with one move.
Andy, when final cutdown day comes, it's one big message to the team. Everyone that was cut sends a message. Everyone that retained is a message. That's who you keep, who you cut, is sending messages to everybody.
So you guys kept tabs on that? Like, you know who should make the roster, who shouldn't, who earned a roster spot, slid in the back door.
Yep.
Ooh,
yep.
That's amazing.
Now, we wouldn't necessarily go around talking about it.
No, but you thought it, and maybe a couple of you in quiet places off to the side did.
Yep. Absolutely.
That's
absolutely.
That's funny. That's interesting. Because we all do it. We're in the media, but and I guess it makes a lot of sense because you guys are there as much as anybody.
You don't think on draft day, everybody that's on the Patriots is going, who do the Patriots draft? I want to see who they got.
How about a couple years ago, there was that famous video of Kendrick Bourne when they drafted Cole Strange at a Patriots player draft party, reacting to it live on Facebook and walking out of the party. And it got shared, and then all of a sudden he had to pull it down.
Yep.
But there were too many aggregators and fan blogs that had grabbed it as well. Of course they're into it.
But I just think more in training camp, I've been beaten down over the years by the answer of, like, I just worry about myself. I got enough to worry about with myself. Head down.
Bubble guys. I mean, you know, the guys that were, you know, that pretty much we know who are shoo-ins to make the team, the leaders, the core guys. Those guys are the ones that are thinking the way.
But Robert Spillane, for example, who I think we all think is like the middle linebacker, the leader of that group.
Even though I have yet to hear him make one play, I don't want to hold that against him.
Okay, well, let's dig into that a little bit.
But
you're concerned about the linebackers?
No,
the $33 million linebacker?
No.
I think, isn't he a wake up and get 150 tackles guy?
That's what he's been. Yeah.
Yeah. I hope they didn't buy him. You're not thinking they bought him on the downside.
Really, I'm more concerned about our D-line. Let's just get to the quarterback. And Spillane and the second line of defense, they're going to be fine. They're not. That's, to me, that's the weakness of the defense, though, is the off-the-ball linebacker.
I will tell you, I thought both – I didn't know a ton about Spillane and Gibbons, and I've been kind of told, like, they're running linebackers. They like to run around a little bit. Yeah. And both of them, which I take with a grain of salt, I think have struggled at times in coverage – in camp, which I still think is the hardest thing linebackers do, is 7-on-7 and different one-on-ones, certainly. I kind of forget any one-on-ones.
Yeah.
I don't care if Ted Johnson could get beat 1,000 times in a row by LaDainian Tomlinson or Curtis Martin, and I'll just roll my eyes and not care.
And I did.
You're human. It's okay.
I just think that's irrelevant. But they have been relatively quiet, but I think Fitzy's right. There is some degree of a guy like Spillane. Remember, when you spoke with him, he out-hardoed you. Remember, he was
he out-hardoed the hardest hardo.
Yes, absolutely. So I feel like a guy like that needs full contact,
no doubt.
Reps.
No doubt.
We will see a very different Robert Spillane week one against his former team, no less.
I'm not worried.
You can't just tell him, oh, this is the two live reps you get today. He needs to get in the feel of the game as a thumper.
Ted, you predicted on this show, not to get into our wildest prediction for the upcoming season. Yours was, I guarantee Travion Henderson will catch at least a touchdown on the wheel route. Andy, you said you predicted a combined, your over-under was 20.5 on touchdowns. Overall, aggregate from Ramondre, Gibson, possibly even Lan Larrison. Because
I'm not including him in my calculus.
You just said the running backs, okay. And especially Travion Henderson.
Running and catching.
Yes,
total touchdowns. Running and catching, 20.5. Bold, I like it. Would love to see it happen. Mine is, I bet you Robert Spillane sees at least one pass attempt for a touchdown in the end zone.
Throws a pass?
No, it sees a pass attempt. Like, as in he gets a pass thrown to him. Mike Vrabel style. I think Vrabel loves this guy. I bet you least one time he lines up on offense, Vrabel style, and gets a pass thrown
in. That is definitely a...
He has been working the jugs. I know it's his job because he's a middle linebacker and he, like, bats down passes and whatnot. He is on the jugs machine an awful lot.
And he caught the one that he had his opportunity to in the Friday night deflected ball, but whatever. Tip ball drill.
Before the end of this season, I'm putting a stake on that. Vrabel's going to give him at least one shot.
Well, I do know that I think it was Gibbons was talking about in Tennessee, Vrabel used to brag about his touchdowns all the time to the linebackers and even the receivers. He would go in the receiver room and say, I had more touchdowns than you whole group of guys have ever
done. He could have said that to the entire receiver room last year.
We had a routine every Friday. And you know we had that linebacking core 03-04 was stacked and it was a lot of fun. Friday after practice, Pepper Johnson would throw passes at us, and you stayed in, so you got a pass thrown to you, and if you dropped it, then you were out, and who was left? Vrabel probably won of the 16 weeks. He probably won 14 of them. The guy's got the strongest hands I've ever seen. He can catch the ball and doesn't double clutch it. And, so my feeling is he's probably passed that down to Spillane a little bit.
I don't want to be disrespectful, but on a regular, what was your usual slotting?
Oh, I wasn't the worst, but I wasn't the best. I was right in the middle.
You could have just asked without the preface of, I don't want to be disrespectful.
I didn't have rock hands, but they weren't as strong as
Vrabel. How about Pfeiffer?
Could he catch anything? Pfeiffer had nice hands too, yeah.
I feel like Fife is nice at anything he wants to do.
The way he dresses, I used to look in his locker room like, who's his tailor, man?
Absolutely.
So I did. I got his tailor.
All right, up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
Way too much money on my suits.
We won't learn about Ted Johnson's tailor, but it's a very exciting segment. I'm more excited about this segment than I've been for a long, long time. Ted Johnson is going to give us his list. Top five most overrated and underrated players from his playing career. I have not seen it. I want to react organically. But he did tell me he thinks there's one or two guys on there that I'm going to at least raise an eyebrow about. So it's Ted Johnson's most overrated and underrated players from his career. That's up next on WEEI Afternoons. But first, Dan Ball has what's trending.